SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. I barely made it back. Went to get a cup of coffee. And also a bite of bagel. I found a bagel shop on the way back from Philly in Bergen County. River Road in Fairlawn. Top notch. Brought home some bagels. Johnny D with us. Speaking of top notch. Everything about our Saturday night, except the whole trip to Philly, went to the flower show at the convention center, and almost got out to Parks. We ended up scratching. We were going to run at Parks. We're going to wait till next Saturday. But at the invitation of Johnny and Gail, had a chance to go out to lovely Bluebell, although I can't tell how. I'm assuming it's lovely because Gail and Johnny live there. But it was dark, so I really didn't see much. But just a phenomenal dinner. Gail outdoing herself. We knew it would be spectacular, and it was. Johnny, thanks so much.
Stevie, you're welcome. Thanks for coming. And as usual, the credit goes to my wife, because if it wasn't for her, I'd never see anyone. But she said, "No, let's invite people." And okay. So I'm going to give her all the credit. And of course, she's a fabulous cook. And I'm lucky, very lucky guy. So thank you for coming. It was great having you and Tina here. Although you didn't see Bluebell much of it because it was dark and snowy and the rest of it, it's a nice little town. About 45 minutes outside of Philly, not a bad place to set up camp. Right on a golf course, pretty nice.
Now we were delighted. Actually, the zip back actually took 35 minutes to get home, back to Center City, and it wasn't. You know, it's not far. It's closer than it's funny. The drive out is always, when you're going someplace you've never been, the drive out is always feels longer than you know, the trip back. I mean, we were back in 2 seconds. And I will say one thing about our get togethers, because I was going to put together a photo montage of the four of us, because we got a picture of the four of us at the dinner table. Our spouses are they're like a superconductor of each other.
There's a lot of bad stuff. A lot of bad stuff going on.
I'll tell you, it's like one of those movies in the science experiment, and they put them in a controlled environment, and they just. They just seem
I'm a little afraid of having it, that they might have a Thelma and Louise kind of moment.
because in recounting the evening, Tina, and I won't say that one is a bad influence on the other. I think that it's a mutually bad influence, and you know, Tina just said, you know, every time I turned around, my glass was full, and I never saw her fill it.
Yeah, another one of my wife's gifts, one of her great abilities. they are fun when they get together, and I that's really great, because my wife, you know, she cooks some dinner, she gets the house nice, and you know, and I say, what can I do? She said, stay out of the way. That's what we can do. And she did ask me to do about three things. And I did those three things. I was done in like 2 minutes. I said, well, what else? No, that's it. So when she cuts loose and has a good time, I'm happy. I'm happy. I want to see her happy.
Well,
and Tita certainly was happy, it was a great meal, and a good time was had by all.
In a big way, really, really fun. And I'm sure you just heard as we were going to the break. I was just lauding the Johnny D Mission Control, which any horse player and sports fan would be envious of the basement setup that Johnny has put together. And years in the making, obviously. This is one of those bunkers that's got history and it's got everything.
Yeah, well, you know, people who've known me for a long time say, you know, you were the first person that I ever knew that worked from home and worked on the road, because. You know, having worked with, after I was an agent on the racetrack, I went to work at UBet in ADW Wagering, right when they started, but before they even started, before they launched, I was working at UBet. And so I got to see this thing called the internet and become a little bit familiar with computers. And, I've never really, other than a little time at UBet, I've never really worked in an office in my life. I mean, I've never worked at look, if you want to call Santa Anita my office, the backstretch at Santa Anita or the backstretch at Hollywood or Del Mar when I was a jocks agent, that might have been an office. I worked in publicity a little while at the racetrack. But I've pretty much been working from home and working from the road. Like, I would go on the road to major races around the country, and I'd have my laptop, and I'd come back to Philly from California, and I'd flop that thing open and, you know, in a back room somewhere, plug it in and you know, get to work. So I've had experience working at home, and so I've been working at home for all my time at ExpressBet. And so over the years, I've known some of the comforts that I need. I've learned, look, I've got to have this, I've got to have that, I've got to have a pool table, I've got to have, a beautiful big screen television, I've got to have a dartboard, a putting surface. I'm going to need a pinball machine. I mean,
exactly.
How can you work at home and not have a pinball machine? I don't know.
That's what everybody says. Absolutely.
Exactly. So I have a few, and I need a couch to take a nap in the afternoon, especially now at my advanced age. And so and all the memorabilia that I've gathered over all this time, we share, because I think Peter brought this up, we share a similar issue, because we have these lanyards and press passes, passes for all these major events that we attend. And like you, I've saved them all these years, and I've framed some of them when I first started, but now it's like it's overgrown that, and now I just hang them on either side of the ones I was able to frame. I just hang the other ones. And it really is. I don't know what to do with them. You said the same thing. Is there a way that how can you display them without taking up an entire wall? Which, you know what, Matt, I'm thinking that's not a half bad idea.
I've got them in two places, sort of. I just keep draping them over, and they just... They just sort of dangle there. Yeah, they're like a. It's almost like a Christmas.
And why do we keep them? I mean, I get.
I don't know.
What are you keeping this for? I get that question a lot about a lot of my memorabilia here in the Johnny D Museum. You know, why do you have this? I don't know.
Exactly. I'm the same way. Just the other day, I took something that has been sitting here, I mean, forever. I bought it at a antique show I think, when I was living in Charlotte. And there used to be a show every couple of weeks at the Metrolina Fairgrounds, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure. When I lived in Cincinnati, I used to go up to Washington Courthouse. That was a great antique show. There's also one across the river in Kentucky that was great, Fort Mitchell, I think. And I have this. I don't want to say what it is because it's on its way to a friend, and it, you know, it's just a little piece of sports, a baseball memorabilia, and it occurred to me to say they've got a real nice collection, and I kind of guessed that they wouldn't have this item. It's a bit of an odd item, and so I packed it up and I mailed it, and I should do more of that. I mean, and Tina says, why don't you sell it? And I said, I don't want to go to the trouble of selling it. I would rather pass it on to somebody who's going to enjoy it, you know, next.
Exactly. And I'm so proud of because of the stuff that I have here in the dungeon, as we call it. It is, none of it, I didn't purchase any of it. You know, it's all either been given to me or my wife has gotten me for some kind of a present, whether it's a birthday or at Christmas. I haven't purchased any of this stuff, you know, including the pinballs.
Wow, that's killer. That's killer, yeah. The pinball. And
it's an old-style machine, too, if anyone's of a certain age, as they say, they will remember these old pinball machines without very limited lights and spinning wheels. And it was the oldest pinball machine, but it's a good working order. It was a gift to me, a birthday gift to a very good friend. So, you know, I got that going for me. Which is nice.
Well, I'll tell you what else was nice was the results for players that participated and beat the host. Let's get that in, first of all, and then we'll talk about the way Saturday unfolded, Johnny, and particularly the three-year-old feature at Gulfstream. But let's get the beat the host championship success in first, and the first thing that was successful was you negotiating, figuring out to not include anything from Santa Anita with the threat of bad weather, and so it was all Gulfstream action, and that was smart. That played well.
Yeah, I mean, normally we would have four Gulfstream races, we'd have four Santa Anita races, and when I originally looked at the entries, I said, oh, great, they've got the downhill races, they've got a mile on the turf, we can use, you know, and I had it kind of planned out, excuse me. But then I thought, you know, the kind of winter they've had, and I've experienced those winters out there, although this one seems even worse than I ever experienced, I said, you know, there might be another storm, I better check the weather. And certainly I looked at the forecast, did not look good, and then I texted Tom Quigley to get some help from somebody on the scene, and he, you know, because a lot of times weather forecasts will predict something, but you in your heart know that's not going to happen. You have a sense that they're a little bit off, or it might break up, or it might go this way or that way. So I wanted to get someone who's actually there, and Tom replied, "No, it's going to rain. We're not ducking this one." So I figured, you know, rather than be at the mercy of scratches and off the turf and, you know, making it more difficult for players, let's just take, and Gulfstream had an outstanding card, graded stakes races. Let's just take the last eight at Gulfstream and let's use those. And Nigel Liu is glad that we did because he won the $5,000 prize. His earnings, $148. That's a $5 wager, a $5 win wager on one horse in each of the eight races. Excuse me. Robert Lipp finished second, $143. So he's $5 behind. He got $4,000. Michael Adoricio, $140.
Adoricio, yeah.
$3,000 for third. Patrick Toby, $133,000. Clara Sanchez was in fifth. Greg Peterson, sixth. Richard Dahlgren, seventh. Keith Lefferts, eighth. Maurice Henderson ninth, that tied with Al McKeever and Joseph Lowry, and then 10th, Brian Fetis. Excuse me. And really, Steve, you know, in the last race, how the tension builds. Nigel Liu had a pretty good lead. He was up by $15 over Patrick Tobe, and Robert Lipp was third, another 50 cents behind Patricia. But nothing much changed in the last. Nigel Liu hung on. Robert Lipp moved from fourth to second, obviously having the winner in the last. And they just kind of shuffled themselves. Nobody made like a giant leap up the board. And that was kind of good to see. So it was a great finish. Excuse me. Oh, man. And the top 30 finishers move on now to Showdown, which is the place you want to be, because that's a $300 entry to get into Showdown, and there's a $20,000 first prize. So that's really where you want to be. You can buy into that tournament that's on March 30th. You can buy into it for $300, or you can come back and Express Bet Live on March 16th, and the top 30 finishers in Express Bet Live also get into Showdown. So Showdown will include the top 30 finishers from Beat the Host Championship, top 30 finishers from Express Bet Live, and anyone else who buys in the Showdown, or you can buy an extra seat in Showdown if you like. It's $300, maximum of two seats for each account holder. So we look forward to that. While I clear my throat, I don't know what's going on this morning.
That's all right. Well, congratulations to everybody who played and who collected, and Beat the Host is always a terrific start to the contest scene around ExpressBet. And speaking of contests, and obviously I'll discuss this with Pete on Wednesday. You saw what happened in the
I told you.
Yeah, did you tell me? All right. Yeah.
I told you Saturday night. I said, did you see what happened? The fours.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right. You did tell me. Okay.
Yeah. Down on all fours.
Well, and that's happening. You know, what we're referring to is there was the first of the free NHC qualifiers for next year, and seven different people filled out their card with all fours, and you know, we're more used to seeing this when it happens with number ones. A lot of times, you know, people will use all ones and just assume that the rail horse is going to get, you know, has got an edge. But there was lots of snickering and carrying on over it. And I don't know. I'm not sure what the dispensation has been. About how they're handling
it.
Yeah, I don't know what you're supposed to do either to stop it. How do you stop it per se?
Well, I would imagine, and this is purely, I would imagine, just as an experienced contest runner, I would imagine you have a provision for ties, and then you would enact that provision for ties, and just, you know, however you decide. The ties, I think, I can tell you what we do in Beat the Host. If you tie with the host, in the weekly competition, if you tie with the host, ties go to the host. The host beats you because it's called
That's
beat
right.
the host. It's not called
That's
tie
right.
the host.
That's
then
right.
we have prizes for positions. So if you tie for third, let's say, well, the prize money for that position and the position for fourth would then be added together and divided between the two players, or fifth or sixth, all the way down. Many players are tied, so that would be, you know, the way we would do that. But if you've got a tie for seat, that's another question, because you can't split a seat. So if you have a tie for seats, the first tiebreaker for us is the player with the single highest winning mutual payoff of all tied players. So whoever picked the highest price horse would be ranked above the other tied players. And if a tie still remains, if they happen to both pick the highest price horse, the player with the second highest single mutual playoff of all tied players. And guess what? If we go all the way down, as in this case, as they went 4-4-4-4, everybody had the same ticket, the exact same ticket. Our final tiebreaker is to the player who chronologically is the first to register for the tournament. So, the early bird gets the worm in that case.
That's an interesting final resolution.
Yeah, you've got to go quite a bit to get there. I mean, you've got to, you know, but this situation, it would have occurred in this situation. And certainly when you're doing online competitions or probably any competition, you know, when people have registered, hard evidence of when they have registered, and that can serve as the final tiebreaker. It encourages people to register early, a little bit early. If everybody's tied through, we have eight wagers. I can't remember how many they had in the NHC this week. It might have been 12, 10, 12. It was a decent number. So really, odds are that the only way you're going to be tied, probably, odds are, is if you've all picked the same numbers.
Exactly,
through,
yeah.
Which is what happened. So what is the fair way? Somebody says, well, that's not fair, whoever registers first. What is the fair way to break the tie? Flip a coin? You have no control over coin flip, but you have control over when you register for contests. So as much as we can keep it in the player's control, that's what we tried to do. Anyway, I didn't look at the rules for the NHC competition and find out what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, I got to look into it as well. Let's turn our attention to the results on the Oval. And you and I kicked it around a little bit on Saturday. We just had Shug McGahee. Andy Serling's going to join us, and John White this morning yet. Well, what's your take, Johnny, on what we saw? Start with the Fountain of Youth.
Well, Fountain of Youth, I mean, I think we can kind of, you know, look at the big picture this year to kind of get a feel for what kind of year is it. I mean, we're coming out of a few years where favorites in these prep races have done very well. I mean, but it's been, we've identified the top horses early, and there's been not much change in the past couple of years. I think we're seeing a little bit different this year. It feels that way to me. I think that now we haven't seen, obviously, the best in California, the top ones in California, but it seems to me this has been kind of a bit more of an upset kind of year. And Code of Honor, heck, at the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, you would have considered him certainly a player, a major player, but that race in the Mucho Macho Man just really took the steam out of his, it knocked a lot of people off his bandwagon, that's for sure. So you went into this race and you had the heavy favorite, Hidden Scroll, and there were so many things, so many question marks about Hidden Scroll that this horse would have had to be an incredible superstar to win this race. I mean, it's tough enough to go from a maiden allowance win to a winner's race, facing winners for the first time, let alone go to a grade two race against a really deep field where if you say to yourself, okay, Hidden Skull has got to jump a bunch of hurdles to win this race. Okay, if you believe that, then to decide who the winner might be, you could go four deep without being terribly creative. You talked about your ticket with Tomorrow, and he went 1-4-6 in his three. So yeah, you can go 1-4-6. And I happen to like Global Campaign in the race, and I mean, actually, the way the race turned out with the Hidden Scroll on the lead or chasing a long shot, then taking the lead, and Global Campaign sitting two, three lengths off of Hidden Scroll, I thought, and then moving up on the turn, I thought, hey, this is perfect. But apparently, Global Campaign grabbed the quarter somewhere in the race, and he faded back when the real running started. But again, I think what got Hidden Scroll obviously was the pace, incredibly fast pace in the race. He would have had to have been Secretariat to overcome that and still win. And in only his second career start, that was really just too much to ask. And people say, well, I saw a lot of jock bashing and different kinds of comments, whether that was the intention in the race to go that fast. Obviously not. But this is what happens when you have an inexperienced horse. This is why it's so difficult. The horse has run one time, and he broke a little slow Saturday. And I think Joel wanted to get him running, wanted to keep him, you know, up close. And when he asked him to run, I think the inexperience and Hidden Scroll just gave him, you want me to go? I'm going. And he just went. And so people say, well, he doesn't want to, well, why is he chasing a 90-1 shot? He didn't want to chase that horse. I mean, people forget that this is not an automobile. And you can't just, you know, I'm going to touch the brakes and back up a little bit now. Now, as a horse matures and gains experience and improves and learns how to race, yes, the good ones, you can pull back on the reins and they'll come right back to you and they'll settle. And you can sit where you want to sit. You can get them running out of the gate and then they'll come back to you once you get your position. But I think inexperienced horses, especially ones with speed and talent, which Hidden Scroll obviously has, he's obviously a gifted horse. But you know, it's asking a lot. If something goes wrong in the race, he's not going to be able to overcome it. And obviously, the quick pace led to, I don't want to say a collapse of the race because
no, it didn't. I didn't think it didn't collapse.
Code of Honor was. It wasn't like he came from last. He was fifth.
Yep.
Fourth, fifth. You know, in the early running. I think the rail was a great place for him to be, and he saved all the ground. But he was running. He was doing the kinds of things that we wanted or that we expected from him after his first two races. He was finishing with gusto, and Johnny V did a great job of guiding him, you know, into the clear around a tiring Hidden Scroll, and earlier, you know, getting by Global Campaign, who got squeezed by Vekoma and Code of Honor on the inside. So he, all credit to him. And something interesting to me, after listening to Shug earlier on the broadcast and earlier, even before the race, he said that he kind of blamed himself for the mucho macho man, that he hadn't trained hard enough on Code of Honor. And that now it was time. Look, you know, Code of Honor had developed more. He'd grown up. And it was time to say, look, you know, we got to get moving here if we're going to do this. And he pushed on him a little bit. And Code of Honor, to his credit, responded. And, you know, was able to take that little bit stronger training, more demanding training. And he blossomed with it. And I think this is something. Now there are other factors in this. I'm not saying this is the only factor, but this is something that Baffert does all the time. He trains. I don't want to say hard because that's kind of, it's almost a negative. It's a negative word. And I don't mean this as negative. I mean this as he asks horses. He wants to find out what he has. And so he'll ask them to do a lot, to work fast. And that's a California thing, too. A lot of fast breezes, You know, you'll see 47s. You'll see 59s, 58s. I mean, it happens that way out in California. And you don't see that too much from any of the top Eastern trainers, from Pletcher or Chad Brown or Shug or any of the top guys. You won't see that. Bob Billy Mott, you won't see that kind of training. But what happens is, if you have enough horses to where you can do that, because it will wear a few out. I mean, you'll lose a few along the way who will just not be able to withstand that kind of training. They'll melt. But if you have enough that you can do that with, the good ones, the ones who can take it, are going to move to the head of the class, and they're going to be so dangerous because they're going to be fit. They're going to be strong. They're going to be experienced. They're going to have speed. You know, you seldom see a Baffert horse come from far back. I mean, you do once in a while, but rarely. I mean, they're meant to be close up. So it's a different philosophy. It works for one person. It may not work for everyone. Certainly, many trainers don't have enough stock to do that, and they don't have good enough stock to do that. Here's Sean, who's got a barn full of well-bred horses. He's making a decision. He didn't think this horse could take any more training. He wanted to wait for him to mature to a point where, okay, now he can handle a little bit more, and I'm going to give him a little bit more to do. And, it paid off. So, also, I want to compare this to the handicapping contest. Okay, we had a freak occurrence where everyone put in fours, and it happened to work. And there were seven people who ended up tied.
By the way, they're doing a bit of a lottery. Thanks to everybody who responded. They're going to draw five names out of a hat of the seven.
Okay. But normally, and you and I both know this, we look at the results, as in I look at the Beat the Host Championship results, and I see five or six names out of the top ten, four or five names that I recognize. These are tournament players. And you and I have talked about this before. It's amazing. As big as the NHC field is, they've now gone to this final table method, but it's amazing how many top players. You see the same names all the time. This is not, and it's the same with the training. The good guys, the really good guys, they have the skill and the talent to know what to do with a horse. They know when to back off. They know when to push the pedal. They know when he needs more, when he needs less, what to do with a horse. How to get the best out of this horse. A lot like coaches in any team. When do you kick your players in the ass and when do you pat them on the back? When do you train them hard? They play bad one week. Well, I'm gonna really make them run this week. Well, go ahead. And when the next game comes up, they're gonna have dead legs. It's like so. Can your team take that kind of treatment? These are all the fine, and some people forget that in any walk of life, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, or a candlestick maker, some guys are better at what they do than other guys. It's just the way it is. I don't care what you're doing. Some plumbers are better than other plumbers.
Yeah.
So no matter what field you're in. And the cream will rise to the top. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes you say, well, I never got the opportunity. No, nobody's going to get the opportunity to handle the kind of horses that the big guys, in air quotes, the big guys get to have. But look, those big guys didn't get there. They got there by winning races. You win because you win. Everybody used to laugh when I used to say that. See these top jocks? When I was a jock, you see these top jocks, why they're there? Why? Because they win. Oh, no, they get the best mounts. No, they get the best mounts. Yeah, but they get the best mounts because they win. And the greatest example of that is to look at a rider who's gone past his prime, or a rider who maybe he's having personal difficulties at home, or he's staying out too late, or he's running around too much, or he's not paying attention to work. He may have Hall of Fame talent. But if he's not doing in the afternoon what he's supposed to do on the horses he has for the trainers that he's riding for, word circulates like wildfire. This guy not winning. What happened to that jock? He doesn't win. Well, he doesn't get the mount he used to get. Yeah, because he doesn't win. That's just the way it goes. And I think, and I like it, it's good to see, you know, showed movie, you know, besides the fact that he's a great guy and he's fun and, you know, he's easy to root for. Billy Mott, easy to root for. It's just that, oh, the other thing, the other point, you tell me to shut up whenever you have to move on. The other point with Hidden Scroll is, and this is just me, you know, I think as time goes by, we are going to look back at what Justified did, and we are going to appreciate it so much, appreciate that accomplishment so much. It is going to grow in stature as time passes, and here's why I think that's the case. I think that I know things have changed. I know it's a different structure and everything with the Triple Crown and everything as far as points and horses are running less each year. I understand all that. But it's about development. And if you don't have that two-year-old race, I think it matters. I really do. Is it impossible? No, it's not impossible. We saw Justified do it, and you know what? I don't think anyone ever thought it was impossible. I think what we thought was it's never happened, or it hasn't happened in a long time, over 100 years. Well, I don't know. Maybe I've been around, you know, gambling too long, but when something hasn't happened in 100 years and it happens once, I'm not ready to say it's going to happen again right away. So I think that the pressure we're putting on these horses who run first time out after January 1st and win a maiden race impressively, right away we think that, oh, you can throw out the Apollo Jinx. It's gone now. Yeah, it's now won for 100 and something, you know. you can't just discount it, you know. It's not like it can't happen. Yes, it can happen. And when Hidden Scroll ran on the 26th of January, won by 14, yeah, I know it was in the slop. But the way he did it was remarkable. It really was. I got out of my chair. I was excited. But then I started thinking, you know, it was slop. Some horses move up. Others move back. You went wire. You know, you start to look at the things that are going to be different down the road. He is a talented horse. There's no doubt about it. And you know what? He ran awfully well.
Absolutely.
He really did. When you look at the fractions and how he, at the finish, you know, he did not collapse like a cheap suit. He hung around at the finish. Look, he wasn't trading blows anymore, but he didn't run to his corner and hide. He hung in there and was still on his feet. And that's the sign of a good horse to do what he did and still hang around. Bourbon War. What a great, you know, now he probably was aided by the shape of the race because he was back there. I think he had two horses beat and he made a big closing charge. But you've got to be encouraged by his race. When he switched leads very late in the stretch. But when he did, man, he took off. He like hit another gear. And I know Johnny Bean saw the line and he knew he was going to get there. with Code of Honor. And I know he didn't ask him for everything, which is what you're supposed to do in the Fountain of Youth, because there's the Derby, then there's the Derby. So I know that's the case. But I thought Bourbon War really, once he leveled out, I thought he was really closing well at the end. I'm not a big Gallop out guy, because I've been told by jockeys over the years that, you know, it depends on the horse. Some horses galloping out, once they hit the finish, once you ease up on them, they stop. I'm done. It's over. You done? I'm done. You know, you're not asking me for any more. I'm done. And other horses, you'll stand up on them at the finish, and they'll take off because they haven't expended themselves completely in the race for whatever reason. They'll take off. Like Rebreak. And I've been told this, and this has been, I've never, in all the races I've ridden, I've never experienced this, but I've been told by enough riders, you know, gallop out, you know, you can't really put too much into it. Now, all that being said, I know horse players who watch gallop out and put a lot of stock in them, and they do very well, which is what you have to love about this game, is because you can do all kinds of things and still find the correct way to the cashier's window. So, but anyway, that's what I thought of the Fountain of Youth in a nutshell.
It's a big nut. I know the tendency, Andy. I'm sure when Andy joins us, I know that he feels that, you know, Hidden Scroll, you still want Hidden Scroll coming out of this. And, you know, one of the modern discussion points more and more as well, you know, this is who I want out of this race, as if you can only pick one horse to want and to be impressed with coming out of the race. But I think that, as I said earlier this morning, that there were things to like about everybody's performance, and even Signalman's was excusable in that the acknowledgement came even ahead of the race that he turns out that he was probably going to need one. Okay, so fine. The rest of the top five, they all, given where they were in the, you know, in this moment in time, in this snapshot, they all acquitted themselves, I thought, well. And as Shug noted, that, you know, he thinks that it'll be a race that we can, you know, we can look back to, and everybody, you know, assuming they all find their appropriate assignments. You know, I think Global Campaign, I'm looking forward to talking to Stanley Huff. Stan had an appointment this morning, but I'm looking forward to his thoughts. I think Stan's going to figure out that this is a horse that doesn't want to go this far, per se, would be more comfortable one turning it, you know, etc. You know, Vekoma looked, the one thing about Vekoma that struck me was the way he just was grinding along. And, you know, that's a, you know, you had noted, Johnny, at some point when we were talking about this race and about this group, you know, you were one of the first people to talk about his way of going. And you actually even had noted that Hidden Scroll, you weren't 100% sold from that standpoint, that he was not necessarily a horse that was the most efficient of movers. But everybody that had their chance did some very nice things in this effort. So I think there's a lot to look forward to, no matter who you went with.
Yeah, and it's hard to say I want this horse coming out of this race, because especially in the case of Hidden Scroll and Global Campaign, because Global Campaign grabbed the quarter, reportedly. If yes, that's the case, how bad was it? How much time are you going to lose? If you lose time now, you have to give up on the Kentucky Derby. You have to find another path, in my humble opinion. But Hidden Scroll, the question then becomes, how much did this effort, this huge effort, how much did this take out of Hidden Scroll? And Phil Model, certainly, you know, it'll be easy for him to to figure that out and decide what they want to do with Hidden Scroll. But going forward this year, right now, I mean, this is a... I don't know if it's better that... If it's better if Hidden Scroll had run like Code of Honor ran in the Mucho Macho Man. In other words, if they don't pick up their feet, you can say, okay, I'm going to train a little harder. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to find out what's going on here. Whereas Hidden Scroll, he laid it down, man. You know, he went right to the, he went all 15 rounds, you know. Even though he wasn't in a photo or anything for the finish, he ran his heart out. He gave a good account of himself. And where, look, did that strengthen him? Did that move him forward? Maybe, you know, I don't know exactly what, you know, what kind of constitution he has, but that was an effort. That was an effort. And efforts like that, they can take the starch out of one. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Johnny, you know what I want to, we've got a couple more minutes. Andy's going to join us top of the hour. On a, from a wagering standpoint, I you know, you and I were kind of in the same mental state about the multi-races, the multi-race wagering. There were a couple of things that went on in that sequence on Saturday, and I don't know what clues. I'm curious what key learning we can take away, because going into it, when you know you looked at it, it seemed like Precious from Chad Brown was, you know, very much a horse to lean on, potentially single. You had to figure, you had to assume that Jaywalk. I mean, if you didn't, if you even if you thought Jaywalk was vulnerable, you would have had to have used all, because they all, you know, the other six were basically the same horse. I mean, they all basically had the same kinds of races to look at as potential jump up, you know, win candidacy. And then after that, you had, you know, very, very much, you know, very much formful type, opportunity. You had, Zulu Alpha that, you know, would, you knew if Zulu Alpha ran his race that it was going to take some beating. So you had places to lean. You had to I thought you had to spread in the fountain. I thought there were, you know, six candidates, and that actually, you know, was an okay way to, you know, to look at it. Anybody that used Code of Honor, you certainly had to have used Vekoma and Bourbon and Hidden and everybody else. I mean, you were if you had the winner, you must have also used, you know, plenty of others. I don't know what to take away though from the way this sequence unfolded, and that also includes the horse in Navarro's, who, if you're a multi-race player, a serious multi-race player, typically a horse like Identifier, you have to just either hold your nose and use, or, you know, use defensively, because he's a horse that is starting to, you know, make you say there's always going to be a candidate that gets by him. You know, that he's had 3 seconds in 4 tries, and he's basically been running the same figure. It's a competitive figure, and he's competitive, but that's a horse in multi-race wagers you typically go against. So I had him as a C to start the pick five, and I thought to myself, well, it might be okay. It might be okay. I was then 1 by 1 by 3 by 2. And it wasn't going to matter, of course, because of Jaywalk. So what do we take away from the way the multi-race sequence unfolded?
I think what you take away is there are favorites that you like, and there are favorites that you go that you don't. There are favorites you like, there are favorites you don't like, and there are favorites that you go, you know, there's something here. And I think that we had examples of these. For example, I think Honor. No. What's his name? Mott's horse. I'm forgetting them. The Mountain View favorite.
The Hidden Scroll.
Hidden Scroll. Was there were a number of reasons you might not like him. He certainly was a horrible favorite that offered no value whatsoever. And you have to learn, as a horse player, you have to learn to be able to see this kind of favorite coming at you. Are they going to win sometimes? Yes. You're going to be wrong sometimes. They're going to win sometimes. But this horse had so many factors that he was going to have to overcome at a short price that you could easily say, I don't want any part of him. So if you do that in that race, then you still have to use, as we discussed earlier, 2, 3, maybe 4 others. Okay. I was particularly upset because in the Rainbow Six maybe started in the 8th. I had, obviously that was a Cambier Park was one that you could, I thought was a liable one, although you may be afraid of the other brown first timer or, you know, but I thought that was pretty good there. The 9th race, the winner of the 9th race,
That was the start. That was the start of the rainbow. Was that Seren?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that it started with the Turf Maiden Group and that Serenitsa.
Serenitsa.
Going back, the Yanikov, the Olympic Star, that.
But that was a spread race, I think. Don't you? I mean,
yeah. Oh no, no doubt about it. And she, you know, it's funny because she was returning to the turf, and her best race had been the turf race, 2 back. So, I mean,
and it was only 2 back, right?
Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
And she had a great breeze since her last race. She had a minute and 4 bullet, best of 9. Oh, what's not to like here? You know, I mean, if you're going deep, that's the kind of horse that you need to use, I think. Identifier, you ask about Identifier. What can you take away? The only thing I can tell you can take away is that, you know, the way I looked at it on, you know, on sheets, you had the High Amplitude, ran a huge number first time out, finished 2nd behind Hidden Scroll. So, you know what? You have kind of a, I don't want to say a mini Hidden Scroll here, but you have a similar situation. Not exact, but you know, here's a horse that ran well on a sloppy track, that is now coming back on a fast track, ran incredibly fast, was wide, came running for 2nd. But that's a sloppy track. This is a fast track. This horse is not a single. So then, if you think Identifier, George Navarro, how can you not use a Navarro race that calls a Navarro horse at Gulfstream Park? You almost would have to be committed to an insane asylum. I mean, the guy's winning it. You know, a Navarro and Service, like if they're in a multi-race wager, I got to use them. It's just the way it is. I mean, that's life in the big city right now. Those guys are winning everything or most of what they sent out there. So, and this is a horse who had credentials too. He wasn't a bum. He's been favored in 3 of his 4 starts. He looked like he had a case of secunditis, but nobody in here really was over the top, I didn't think. And especially if you had reservations about High Amplitude because of the sloppy track performance. And then Ranger Up, who was Todd's horse in the race, again, 2 sloppy track races. Well, you know, what are we going to get on a fast track? I really don't know. So I kind of understood that race. I wasn't going to let a Navarro beat me, that's for sure. Precious, I agree with you there, top notch. If you're running in winning group one races, and you come to the U.S., you're going to fit. You're going to fit in any kind of stakes that you run in. If you're running a grade 2, you're going to be the nuts. And if you're running a grade 3, forget about it. There's no way you should lose. And great ride by Javier Castellano in that race. Then you come to Jaywalk. There were some. This is the one I was like, there's things I don't like here. first of all, she's coming off a layoff, which, okay, she's put away. That's fine. The layoff's understandable. She was working every 7-8 days leading up to it. And there was a 10-day break in there. And then she had an 11-day gap, right, just before the race. Now, look, I don't know that anything, that there was any reason for that gap to be there. I don't know anything at all. But I know I don't like it. I don't feel comfortable. Why is there an 11-day gap right before? You're coming off a layoff.
No, you pointed that out. You were on top of that.
And look, John knows what he's doing, certainly. And here's the thing. Sometimes, you know, a horse is not feeling well. That's an off day, maybe a little fever. So you don't train, you back off a little bit. And then she's okay in the next day or the next 2 days. All right, so we start back. But, you know, and you think, as good as she is, as much as she towered over this field, you would think, as a trainer, she's gonna win anyway, because she's that good.
Right.
You know, I missed a day or two, big deal. And you know what? They do win. Sometimes it doesn't matter. So this was a tough one, because I was like, she's the one to beat, but I don't like that circled 11 I have there. But as you said, okay, so if you don't like her, what are you going to do? You look at the rest of the field, you got to use them all. You really do. And you back into a 50-to-1 shot, and it's your day. The gods have made it your day. The racing gods have smiled upon you. You made the right move. But it wasn't my day. I singled Jaywalk. I had to.
Me too.
That's not in my stomach. But a little queasy. I don't know about this one today. But because I looked at the rest, I can't use them all. So I singled Jaywalk. Boom. You know, you go down with.
Yeah. No, I don't know if the lesson is that if you were uncertain about what the potential return, I mean, as it was, the pick four paid $2,000 and the pick five paid $16,000, $2,300 for the pick four, $16,300 for the pick five. I mean, so, you know, you say, well, it was worth playing anyway. No matter what, it was worth playing. But I'm not sure how you find an angle to it, especially with the original thought that, well, if it goes chalky, and there's every reason to believe it might, we're better off attacking this, attacking the sequence in a different way. And certainly the way we did it with you know, the way Nick Tamaro laid it out with the game builder approach, where the triple and the double ended up being, you know, very successful. So I don't know. These are the things you grapple with every week, every day you play. So, Johnny, let me pull up and appreciate it. Really fun, and we'll have a lot to go over next week. Did we lose Johnny? There's an abrupt ending. We lost Johnny. All right. He must have run out of quarters to put in the phone. Andy Serling joins us next.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Next generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.